Everyone, welcome back. It's another episode of Inside Boxing presented by PPV.com in association with Uncrowned and Yahoo Sports. Dan Canobio, it's the champ, Chris Algieri. We're coming to you on Sunday, May 10th, Mother's Day. Literally ducked out from a family function. The entire family's upstairs. I'm at my parents' house right now. I'm in the Compu Box headquarters. Chris had a travel morning coming from Atlanta. So the podcast life never stops. We're always going to bring you this show because it was a great weekend of boxing. Chris, I kind of know how you're doing because you were sitting on that tarmac for about 2 hours. But are you feeling a little bit better on this Sunday morning?
Listen, I love Atlanta. I love the boxing culture in Atlanta. The Atlanta airport is the bane of my existence. I always have issues when I'm coming through that airport.
It's a hub.
It's such a busy airport, but I sat on that tarmac for 2 hours. The flight is an hour and 20 minutes to South Florida. I sat on the tarmac longer than I was in the air. So had to get up early. I worked late, had to get up early. This weekend was a wild weekend in terms of production-wise, like behind-the-scenes kind of stuff. Inside boxing, that's why you guys tune in. We'll get into a little bit of that. But I'm a little tired. And it's Mother's Day, which is a heavy day for me. So I'm going chasing.
Shout out to all the mothers out there, that all the wives too, that allow you that listen to this show to watch this show, watch boxing on the weekends. All the boxing moms out there that took their kids to the gym and all that. Shout out to moms in general. If you're not affiliated with boxing, it's a very special day. Everyone out there.
Dan, let me tell you though, I had a lot of people in Atlanta grab me and say they listened to our show religiously. Like they were like, bro, we love what you do. You and Dan are the best. I tune in every single show. Half a dozen people, at least half a dozen guys grab me and be like, yo, I listen.
That's
to you
amazing. Because there's nothing better. Because I always said this once when we did one of our lives. I was like, I think no one listens. I think me and you were just talking to each other. But then you go out into the fights and you meet the people that listen to the show and they tell you how they listen to it, when they listen to it, how much they love it. Awesome. Love that. So
they quote us. It's crazy. They quote the funny things we say.
That I say?
Mostly the dumb shit that you say, but yes, they do.
So shout out to everyone that listens and happy Mother's Day out there. Let's get into it. It was an unbelievable heavyweight fight. Quite arguably one of the best heavyweight fights ever. It's in the discussion because of the brutality and just the back and forth of it. Daniel Dubois stops Fabio Wardley in the 11th round. Dubois was down on the very first punch of the fight from Wardley. He was also down in the third round. But he had amazing recovery powers. He took a knee in the third round, which you famously did against Ruslan Pravodnikov, which saved you, and it also saved Daniel Dubois. He got behind his jab. He landed a shit ton of jabs. We talked about that on the last episode. And then it was just a straight-up just warfare, brutality towards the end. I was watching it through my fingers because I don't know how Wardley took some of these shots. His face is bad. We'll talk about him in a second. Daniel Dubois is now a two-time heavyweight champion. Guy's got an unbelievable resume now, stacking up wins, stopping guys. Daniel Dubois, he's the guy. What a freaking win. What a fight. An unbelievable heavyweight fight.
Dan, I didn't even warn you about this. We're going to do a new segment. We're going to do a new part of the show.
What do you got?
From now on, when a title changes hands, I'm wearing that belt for the rest of the show.
WBO strap.
I got my little miniatures.
You got
now.
All of them? Really? Where'd you get those?
So whenever I ordered them a while ago. They got stuck in Jersey when I was living up there. But I have them now down in South Florida. So now whenever we do our shows and when a title changes hands, I am wearing said belt that was won for the rest of the show. So like you said, Daniel Dubois, two-time world champion. That is rarefied air. Especially in the heavyweight division, very few guys would be able to win another title especially after losing it the way that Daniel Dubois did. I mean, but honestly, Dan, this fight, this is why boxing will never die. This is fight of the year type fight. At heavyweight, you got two guys who are brutal punchers. We expected a war. We expected the fight to go not this long. I didn't expect, I mean, 8.5 was the over under for Vegas. So they knew this fight was going to be explosive. These guys won 11 rounds. We had multiple knockdowns. Wardley, like you said, comes out of the gate firing, dude, firing. I actually had a little break while I was on the air and I was able to watch the beginning of the fight. And I'm like, Wardley drops him in the first 15 seconds of the fight. And I didn't put in my bet. I was like, oh no, I didn't put in my bet. Good thing I didn't, because my bet was Wardley.
I mean, first punch of the fight.
So I'm like, oh, this fight's over. Clips him on the side of the head. Boom, he goes down. We know that there are questions about Dubois when it comes to his heart, comes to his psychology. But every once in a while, this guy shows up, the Ergovich fight, the Jarrell Miller fight, and he's undeterred. That guy showed up again. If that guy shows up consistently, I don't think anyone except for Usyk beats him. Dubois is a nightmare. The jabs that he was landing. So let's talk strategy.
Battering
ram.
Let's talk
nuts and bolts. Let's talk X's and O's. So right away, you see Wardley come out. And I saw the very first punch. It wasn't the first punch that landed, because he threw a wild overhand right away. And I was like, whoa, this guy's, he's throwing heat right out the gate. And then the very next punch he throws, I think, is the one that dropped him. So it wasn't the first punch he threw. First punch he landed, yeah. Goes down. But from then on, as soon as Dubois got up, he did look nervous and concerned, because the power was real. I don't think he's ever felt power like that early. The jab started working. And we spoke about this on our show. He just started putting that jab out there, and he was cutting off Wardley's wild attempts all night long. And Wardley's tough as you could possibly be. His face was destroyed. He was getting cracked with hard shots. And I've heard from people who dealt with Dubois, they say his jab is a battering ram. It is jarring. Every jab hits you, you feel it in your heels. And fighters will know what I mean. You get hit with a good jab, you feel it in your heels. It shoots all the way down like a kinetic chain, like a lightning bolt. Zoom! And that's the way that Dubois punches. And we saw that, because in between all those wild shots that Wardley was trying to land, it really his only game plan was landing the right hand. But he did it with conviction. He did it with heart. He did it with soul. But Dubois is just a more complete fighter.
Yes. Great recap. Dubois landed 92 jabs, 43% jabs. He threw 211 of them. And you're right. I went on Twitter live, because I was like, I have to just like call this somehow. And I'm sitting there. I'm like, this guy's got to get back to the jab, Dubois. Every time he threw the jab, it seemed like it landed, and it looked like it pushed back Wardley, and then Wardley had to reset his entire offense. And Wardley didn't have much of an offense. He brought up the all he had was the right hand, and it was throwing it crazy from the opening bell. Questions about Wardley, about his stamina, about his game plan. Questions about Wardley's corner. Thought they should have stopped the fight maybe two rounds earlier. We could debate that another time. But yeah, this is about Daniel Dubois. A great game plan, X's and O's. Mentally overcoming a lot of things in his career to now be a two-time heavyweight champion. I mean, that's exceptional for Daniel Dubois. And look at his wins. Daniel Dubois has now stopped Fabio Wardley, Anthony Joshua, Filip Hrgović, Jarrell Miller. That's a heavy hitters list, and he stopped them all. On top of that, quick shout out to Alexander Usyk. How good is Alexander Usyk? He beat Daniel Dubois twice. He stopped Daniel Dubois twice, in addition to Joshua and Tyson Fury. So this heavyweight division, or this heavyweight era that we're in, people are like, it wasn't the best heavyweight era. 70s are better. 90s are better. Still generating great fights. This was a thriller. This is one Frank Warren said it's the best heavyweight fight that he's ever put on. So those are my main takeaways, that Dubois fought a really smart fight, taking the knee early, hitting the top of the head. Something about, I think, top of the head shots on Dubois, or I think a lot of heavyweights are going to look at that, because his chin is a lot stronger than the top of his head. Mentally, he got through it. He even said in the post-fight, to echo your sentiments, that he was a little nervous early on. He hadn't fought in a while. He was coming off of a loss. First punch that lands from Wardley hits the canvas. So he overcame that in the ring, in addition to all the crazy stuff. He was late to the fight. Did you see that? There was traffic. So I
was working a show last night while this was all going on. I was on the mic at 5 p.m. So I was with our guy, Najee. I was with Brian Custer on the mic when we were all very much on our phones trying to watch. I had the DAZN broadcast on my on my phone watching it in between the downtimes on our show. And Najee's really strong on Twitter, so he was was catching all the recaps in terms of Chris Mannix was like, Dubois late.
You got to be kidding. When I saw that, you got to be kidding me. Like, this guy is either partying, and someone did correct me. He did.
Well, he said he was going to party. He said he was going to be a bigger party.
He partied before the Joshua fight that I did not know, and he won that one. Because we all dragged him when he partied before the Usyk fight. I guess that's what he does. He likes to party before the fight. There was traffic. He showed up late. I just remember watching, seeing that tweet come along. I'm like, you got to be kidding me. But then he went in there, and he did the damn thing, and the knee was huge, taking a knee in the third round. And then he just got behind that jab, and it's that simple. We talked about it on the last episode. I thought it was a key to victory. And also throwing, I mean, the right hands are just unbelievable stuff. And if there's ever like a moral loser here, or a hard luck loser, or a, what's the right term I'm looking for? There's a lot of people tweeting about Wardley, about how tough he is. I want to watch him fight again. He took some insane punishment in this fight. Never went down.
Never went down. Like, never went down. He's still never been down.
The ropes did save him a bunch of times. I thought Howard Foster, the referee, had an awful night yet again. He's the worst referee in all of boxing. He stopped the round with 10 seconds to go when they were rumbling. I think it was like the fifth or sixth round. He thought he heard the bell. He could have stopped it if Ben Davison wasn't going to stop it. I thought it should have been stopped in like the eighth round. It went on for 2.5 more rounds. Where I...
ultimately it didn't make a difference, obviously, and it would have saved Wardley from taking more damage. I did see that he said, like, he was talking to his mom, he was like, I'm okay, I'm good. And
say that now.
He looked, yeah, that's a very good point. He was beaten that night, last night. He was beaten. He got hurt a lot, his face was destroyed. But I didn't get the sense of a guy who had his career beaten out of him.
Right.
That's yet to be seen. But I didn't get that sense. Sometimes you can see it. You can see the fighting spirit, the soul of a fighter leave. I didn't see that. He was trying to fight the whole time. He was trying to land the right hand. He just ran out of everything. He had no more options. He ran out of gas. He ran out of stamina. He ran out of chin. Everything ran out. Still didn't go down. He still has the heart of a guy who's going to fight. I think Wardley's going to be okay after this. Yet to be seen, because you never know, because the damage is damage and, you know, whatever. But I don't know. I got the sense that the fight wasn't beat. The spirit wasn't beaten out.
No, I agree. His legs look fine.
I think.
Yeah, his legs look pretty good up until like midway through the ninth. The ninth round was epic stuff. The last minute of the ninth.
Yeah. But he kept
doing. Yes, that's the thing. And that's why I believe that Davison let it go on, because he's thinking of the Justice Hooney fight. He's down the cards and he finds something in the 10th round. He's thinking of the Parker fight.
Even me in my career, I wasn't a puncher, but I always went down throwing. I tried that. I was always like, Spence dropped me, I was throwing. Ben stopped me, I was throwing. I was always trying to land. I never, like, you know, when a fighter is like that, that spirit doesn't leave you.
And that's what Wardley did. And, he's going to be out for a while. They're talking about a rematch. Like, there's a rematch clause. Like, he'd be smart to sit out for several months. Like, not just like a 6 month, like,
his nose is pretty much opened up.
Everything.
His nose, he had a scab on his nose before the fight.
The ninth round, the last minute of the ninth round was hellacious. Back and forth. Even when Wardley had his back on the ropes and looked like he was about to get stopped, he threw an uppercut that stopped Dubois for a second. And then Darren Barker, it reminded me of Gotti Ward. I remember in the ninth round when Lampley said...
Yeah, ninth round.
When Lampley round said, imagine you bought a ticket. So Barker didn't exactly say that. I don't know if he was channeling his inner Lampley, but Barker said something along the lines of, if you bought a ticket to this fight, or if you bought a pay-per-view, if you bought this on pay-per-view, in that ninth round was like, it was epic stuff. And I'm sitting there watching it like, this is brutal. And my dad, I was just talking to him. He's upstairs. He was talking about, he's seen every fight in the last 40 years. He said that the last three rounds made him uncomfortable. And there's not a lot of fights that he watches where he feels that way. Where it just got, I saw that sentiment echoed on Twitter a lot too. It's like the people were like, all right, this is starting to not even look like a sport. He was just beaten down on Wardley. So I think it could have stopped early. But it's easier for us to say in hearsay or after the fact. I thought, you let your guy fight to live to fight another day. But Wardley, I think the worst thing that had happened to Wardley in this fight was landing that first overhand right, because then he didn't stop throwing it.
No, the worst thing
on top of that, but like him landing that right, the first punch, and then knocking him down, and then because after that he kept doing the same. That was probably his game plan, but also he saw a lot of success with it. It ended up being his downfall, or one of the reasons of his downfall, because he fell in love with that overhand right, and he was winging it, and he emptied his gas tank super early in this fight.
Couple things. I'm gonna go back a little bit before I get to what you're just talking about. You mentioned the Gotti Ward. I was at Gotti Ward 1, which is very rare.
Went to most people 16 were
not
instead. At
that fight. They did not expect it to be the fight that it was. And I was there at that fight, and I was sick to my stomach with the violence. It was that kind of fight. And it was the kind of fight where you're watching round 9, and I was a huge Gotti fan. I thought he was going to go out there and smoke Ward, but it became a fight, a dog fight. And I was like, oh no, I'm watching my hero lose. And then the ninth round, I was like, please stop the fight. I don't want to see this man get hit anymore. And then he shored himself up and came back and kept fighting, and then had two more great fights with him. And then won a title after that with Gianluca Bronco, and then like kept going. Like, so I'm never going to say, because I'm a fighter. Like, you're like, oh, this shit stopped earlier. I'm like, I don't know, because I didn't get anything from Wardley where he was like, I don't know.
I just think he wasn't going to win, and they were praying for that stoppage.
No, listen, but Dan, you can never tell me in a Pacquiao. I fought Manny Pacquiao.
This is you. Your corner is supposed to see that. They're supposed to be the voice of reason.
I have pleaded with my corner in multiple fights.
Well, it's a Wilder did too, and Breland didn't listen, and then Breland got fired.
So if my corner didn't want to stop me in the Ruslan fight, but the doctors did, and I was pleading with them not to. If that doctor had done what they probably would have done for anyone else, I'm not a world champion. You know, like, I had to plead hard. I was fighting in the corner as much as I was turned around for these guys not to take the fight. My face was falling apart. But also, like, I had a similar situation in the Pacquiao fight. They wanted to stop the fight. I got dropped a bunch of times. I was, I was down. And there was no way for me to win. I didn't care. I wanted to finish the fight. And I think Wardley wanted to too, but also he believes in his punch. I wasn't a puncher. I didn't have that Hail Mary. But in terms of what you were saying about not even just how the fight ended, but like Wardley's ability to possibly pull that out of the fire, he always has that. He came out flinging that right hand. He had that in his head, like, I can still hurt this guy. I've hurt him. Put him down twice. Dropped him with a clunker on the top of the head, and then he took a knee when I hit him. So even when you're battering me along the ropes in round 10 or 11.
I know. I kind of thought Wardley would land something, and then I think the last.
Anthony Joshua almost did it. Anthony Joshua was getting battered by Dubois and lands a right hand that wobbles him.
Uppercut.
And he takes it back. And
Dubois a beast, man. This guy is scary. He's scary. He reminds me of a throwback. You can drop him into any era. And now, he was left for dead a few years ago after the Parker fight.
He's got a little like Kenny Norton in him. Like, he's just like, he's big, strong.
Did you see that after he won? It reminded me, like, he was getting swarmed by his team, getting hugged, and he was just standing there. It kind of looked like back in the day. Like, the celebration was really cool. And him afterwards was awesome. Like, the amount of respect they have for each other. And, like, we talked all week about Dubois. He's a horrible interview. He's walking out of interviews. Doesn't give you – who cares? Because after the fight, he kept it so brief, and he just kept it 100. And it was just like, we're warriors. Like, Fabio Wardley's a warrior. I came through. I battled adversity. I tested myself. I won. Great heavyweight fight. Hope you were all entertained. Amazing. That's all we have to hear. All we have to hear from the mic drop. All we got to hear from this guy. So he's now a two-time heavyweight champion. So what is next for Daniel Dubois? There is a rematch clause. I'd be shocked to see that exercise given the beating that Wardley took. If it's going to be a rematch, it's going to be not for a while. There's the Alexander Usyk trilogy that no one really wants to see. And the most intriguing option for Daniel Dubois out there is Moses Atalma. He is promoted by Queensberry Promotions and Frank Warren. Will Frank Warren put Moses Atalma in the ring with Daniel Dubois?
I don't think that's the fight.
It's juicy. People like it because it's not Usyk and it's not a rematch. It's something fresh.
I'm going to throw someone completely in the mix out of nowhere because I literally just saw the man last night in ATL, Deontay Wilder. I want Deontay Wilder and Daniel Dubois. I think that fight makes too much sense. You got two dangerous guys. And I think Wilder asserted himself that he's back. Bomb Squad's back. He fought Chisora in a way that we were like, oh, this guy can still throw the right hand. This guy still has a little bit of that edge to him, even though he was fighting apparently a guy who's his friend. And I wanted more from that fight, but I saw enough. I saw enough that he could still pull the trigger. If he can pull the trigger, he can beat almost anyone in the world. And we've seen Dubois go down. We saw him go down twice with right hands over the weekend. We've seen him go down, obviously, against Usyk. We've seen him get stopped. Deontay Wilder is always a danger. If this guy lands a chopping right hand, this guy lands a long right hand, this guy lands any right hand, there's a good chance Dubois gets hurt.
I don't hate it.
And he goes down. I think there's a perfect passageway for Deontay Wilder to step into another world title fight that actually makes sense. Because we're not forced. I don't think that fight's forced.
No, it's the Joshua Fury fight is happening. I mean, they signed the on the dotted lines. They even reiterated it again today. So it's not like Fury's going to just like rip up a contract or change the plans and be like, I want Dubois now. No, Fury is fighting AJ. So that's gone. Wilder versus Fury or AJ, that kind of felt like a pipe dream. Wilder versus any of the well.
It seemed forced.
I don't hate it. I don't hate it. I don't think a Thomas is going to happen next because I just think that's malpractice. It's just they're not going to do that. It's just they're not going to throw him in there with Dubois. No, it just doesn't make sense business-wise and – I think Atalma would have a lot of success, but it would be a heck of a fight. I just don't think that's next. Don't want to see the Usyk fight. I think we all can agree there. I would be open to the rematch, but that's going to be months and months and months away, and it might just go the same exact way, unless Wardley changes some things up, learns how to throw a left hook, increases or it fixes his gas tank.
I actually don't think it goes the same
way. What do you think?
I think that Wardley learned a tremendous amount from this. As long as he's not damaged physically and psychologically, and he might be damaged physically. I don't think he was damaged psychologically. I mean, there's always PTSD as an issue, but like, I don't get that from his psychology. Some fighters just don't get affected by that. Like, it never bothered me. I don't see that from him. Just the competitiveness in him is not going to be, I don't think it's going to be an issue. But I do believe that the skill gap is his issue. And he's built... Again, I keep going referring to myself. Like, I had to learn on the job, and I think Wardley's in that position as well because I started so late to boxing, and Wardley is the same kind of way. But I was a very athletic guy. Wardley's a very athletic guy, but he can punch. I wasn't a puncher. I had to learn the skills. I think he might skip a little beats because of his power, which I think we saw early in the fight when he was just like...
He's like Wilder. Right, Wilder had a lot of deficiencies too, and he made up for it with the great equalizer.
He is and he isn't because Wardley is just an athlete. Wow!
Did he play wide receiver?
Too, but he had the right hand. Yeah, he was an athlete too. But Wardley's like a—I don't know, man. I don't see a lot.
But to sum it all up, you would if you could rank it next, you would have for Dubois, you would have Wilder rematch next, with Wardley, Atalma, then Usyk.
Yes. I don't think Usyk's gonna be
in terms of like what you would want to see next for Dubois.
What I would want to see next would be Wilder.
Is there any other names we're forgetting?
If he beats Wilder, which I would favor Dubois, and then rematch with Wardley, and I don't know who he wins that fight, and the winner of that.
How about Caballero is going to fight? I don't think they're going to move Caballero off the Usyk. He's been waiting and.
They're going to fight.
Frank Warren has been pretty adamant about that, so I would like to see Caballero mix it up with Dubois.
I would like to see, so I believe Usyk beats Caballero. Yeah. I would like to see Caballero and Atalma at some point after he's already lost to Usyk. I think There's opportunities for Italma to fight guys like Richard Torres. I like that fight a lot. I've said it a few times. Jared Anderson. I like that fight a lot.
Torres is fighting next 2 weeks on the pyramid fight. You know, another thing, too.
Good for him. Also Jalolov had a win over the weekend.
That guy is regressing.
I did not because it was on the air. Which is I'm going to blame his opposition. I think if you put him in with top flight guys,
he's I know he's making a lot of money in wherever he's from. I forgot. Don't quote me on that.
He's Kazakhstan.
No, I know he's making a lot of money there by doing the amateur stuff and like kind of going back and forth. But it's ultimately, I've said this a million times, it's ultimately crushed his development as a heavyweight boxer. And he looks so pedestrian in the last couple of outings. Yeah, I definitely want to see Dubois. Dubois is the guy now. I mean, one of the guys at heavyweight. He's got a heavyweight strap. He's got the WBO strap. There's some really good fights out there for him. So we'll keep an eye on that. I was watching this Dubois-Wardley fight, a real fight, 18,000 people in attendance, you know, a sellout, great promotion, great fight. And then in 2 weeks, we're going to watch Usyk fight Verhoeven. I'm like, oh, that's just like, I wish that fight wasn't happening.
But we have a grace period because we just saw a fantastic heavyweight all time. This is an all time fight.
Definitely,
fight,
I was gonna like, are we being hyperbolic here? Are we being prisoners of the moment? I don't think so.
No, not at all, not at all. This was an edge of your seat, dangerous fight with two serious killers and an upset and a changing of the hands.
That was awesome
in terms of the belt. All time fight. This is why boxing will never die. This fight is why boxing will never die. I had friends texting me, and they're like, they come from the MMA world, and they're like, there is nothing like heavyweight boxing. They're like, yo, MMA.
I stayed up and watched the Strickland fight because I've been watching more MMA because it's so much easier to watch now with Paramount. So I like Strickland. That Strickland fight was so mediocre.
Yeah, and I like Chimaev too.
Mediocre.
But like, that's how all the main events
they
are.
They were standing there, good in close range, not throwing any heat. Jab, little pity pat jabs, takedown, defense. I get it. Strickland performed better than people thought he would. And that happens in boxing all the time. Then you give him way more credit. Chimaev, this is not an MMA podcast. Chimaev had a bad weight cut. But to your point, yes, to go from watching Wardley and Dubois throw down an epic heavyweight fight to the main event of UFC, which is like a very popular sport, let's be honest. I'm just sitting there like kind of salty, not trying to be that guy to compare MMA to boxing all the time. But I'm like, This is the best you guys can offer right now?
I'm never salty because I'm always like, no, this is just a better sport. There's no question. There's no question in my mind at any point in the history of the world has MMA been better than boxing. Boxing
right,
is
when done
the best
right.
Sport
I always say
world,
that. When done
hands
right.
Down. I'm not saying best combat sport. I'm
the
saying
scenes
best
are epic.
Sport.
You can't get better. Boxing, you've never been to a big fight out there, people listening, you got to make sure you get out there. The scenes before a big fight, it's out of a movie. Like both guys making their ring walk. That ring is empty. The lights, the music, Michael Buffer. Then they get in the ring and they throw down an epic fight. So we've seen so many movies like that. One guy gets their hand raised. They hug after. It's just like – it takes your breath away. So I imagine everyone that was there Saturday night at the Copper Box – 18,000. That's amazing. And they did it all without, any Turkey involvement in Saudi. And that became a thing because remember when the fight?
Frank Warren. Warren's
the
heavyweight G.
This guy's a gangster.
Man.
You remember the ring put out that weird statement saying that the fight was having trouble selling and they're having issues. And no, that was ridiculous propaganda. The fight did fine. In fact, it did great. It was one of the biggest indoor attendance. It broke all sorts of records. And it was an awesome fight. So, yes, when boxing is done correctly, best sport in the entire world. David, hands down. Morrell, upset by Zach Chelly. Morrell was a minus 2,000 favorite. Chelly is a 28-year-old school teacher from Fulham, UK, with 3 losses on his docket. This was shocking to see. Morrell, back-to-back fights with Benavidez and Katiev. Many thought he lost to Katiev, took a pretty good beating in the Benavidez fight. Didn't look good against Hot Rod. Hasn't looked good at 175 compared to 168. Back to the drawing. I don't even know what's next for David Morrell, but this was a shocking upset.
David Morrell is unfortunately falling into the cautionary tale. He is fastly becoming the cautionary tale of how not to maneuver a talent. Taking tip-top flight competition, David Benavidez right away. He fought really good fighters on the way up also. But then right to, like, David Benavidez is gonna go down in history as, like, a pound-for-pound guy. You know, so catching him early, in hindsight, it's going to look better. But then going right into a guy like Khatiev, who failed a drug test right before the fight, by the way, decides to fight him anyway, gets dropped, is in a war, shows his, like, just massive toughness and you know, ability, and just grinds it out and pulls out a close fight. And then also, this is another one, and this is I think a lot of people who don't know the sport and are not fighters are going to overlook this. He had a fight scheduled.
It's psychology.
What do you do? What do you do? Not even psychology. Mm. Overtraining. What do you do? Do you take time off, restart camp, and go back to the... Or do you try and get a quick bag real quick and jump into a fight?
You got to get that bag. You don't want your trainers paid. You want to get paid. Your team wants to get paid.
I don't think so. I don't think so.
No, I don't think it's the right thing. But like, some guys take the fight and others don't.
Nope. I've been in this situation, Dan. I'm telling you right now. At low level, I was in this situation.
But do you ever feel a responsibility? No. Like you have so many other people depending on you?
No. My responsibility is to myself. I'm going to pay my team. They're going to get paid. But if I lose, nobody gets paid. If I lose, the potential of their bag,
the gravy train
diminishes greatly. David Morrell's gravy train's over.
Well, he's regrets. That's another thing, too. Like, I think anyone could have beat him on this night. I bet you Ben Whitaker is kicking himself for not taking this fight.
But he was winning the fight.
I thought he looked horrible. And
he just couldn't. But he was still winning the fight against a guy who's
minus 2,000 favorite Morrell. So I'm surprised.
I mean, we've seen minus a lot from like a Lamont Roach versus Gervonta. Like that he was a.
I wonder what happens now with this mandatory situation at 175. Like, well, if Benavidez doesn't get Bivol, because it's kind of looking like Bivol and Beterbiev might tangle with a different billionaire backing it, a Russian billionaire, that might happen.
100%.
Yeah, I think so too. So then Benavidez might look to Callum Smith.
I don't think we're going to see David Benavidez at 175 if it's not Bivol.
Yeah, we talked about that last week with the cruiserweight versus 175 debate.
Which in that case, if I say that, we might never see David Benavidez at 75 ever again.
It's definitely, he started following us on Instagram, and he definitely saw our video about us. You saying that, and you weren't throwing shade. It was a compliment.
No, not at all.
He looked so damn good at cruiserweight.
Why? Yeah,
that he might never go down there. I said I didn't like what he said. So I mean, it's an option now. Callum Smith's an option. He's not fighting David Morrell. That was supposed to be the fight. Morrell stepped in with this stay busy fight. He loses to a massive underdog. Good card though. Over in the UK, that was a really good card. Over to the card you were calling. What the hell happened with this one? Raees Aleem comes in 2.8 overweight. Fight canceled. Can you give us some insight on what the heck happened with this? I was a big-time bummer.
Yeah. Good fight. Big-time bummer. Was very excited for the fight, actually. I've called Leo's last 5 out of his 6 fights live for the actual promotion. I didn't call the Japanese fight. I called it from the Pro Box Studios, but it wasn't the live call for the actual production. But I've called 5 other fights for him. And so I know him very, very well. I like him. I respect him. I know all about him and his team. And Raees Aleem, got to interview him a couple weeks ago, looked to be in fantastic shape, was very excited for this opportunity. 35 years old, understood this was his last shot. Trains with Bones Adams, who's a very good friend of mine. I've known Bones for many, many years. Actually, sparred with Bones about 14 years ago when he was trying to make a comeback. Him and I were joking about that over some beers after Friday night. So this was a bit of a disaster. You know, we got to the show. The weigh-in comes over 2.8 pounds over, which is a lot. Guys, at home, people are like, oh, it's only 3 pounds. No. It's 3 pounds at the end of a weight cut with the other guy who made the weight and did those 3 pounds. Angelo has to make weight at 26 now. He is a full-grown featherweight. I saw him at the weigh-in. He is drawn. He struggles to make 126, as all the champions do at 126. You have to. It no longer becomes a competitive advantage at the highest level. It becomes leveling the playing field because everyone is so goddamn big. Everyone cuts weight. Everyone is big. Rafael Espinosa is gigantic. If you're not cutting weight to make 26, you're not beating that guy. You're in a different You're in a different world than him. He's my size. It's crazy. He's eye to eye with me, Rafael Espinosa. We're talking about 126 pounders. So Angelo Leo has put on the proper lean tissue to be a real 26 pounder. The guy struggles to make the weight. It's not an easy cut. And Aleem coming in at almost 3 pounds over is a big deal. And from what I understood and I heard from his team, he was 2.8 over and dry. So it just wasn't coming off. So unfortunately, in Atlanta, you'd only get 1 hour, not 2 hours like a lot of the other states to make the weight. So when I heard that, I was like, well, he's not making it. 3 pounds, you're not doing 3 pounds in an hour at the end of a weight cut. So I said it right away. This fight's not happening unless Angelo just wants to fight. So Aleem comes back after the hour break. He took off 0.8, which I was surprised he even did that. So he's still 2 pounds over the featherweight limit. Title would not be on the line if they were to fight, if Leo decided that he was going to fight anyway. And Leo and his team decided with health concerns to not take the fight. They got paid regardless because the IBF rule is if you make the weight, you get paid. So
did they get paid?
What's that?
There was like a confusion out there. Lance Pugmire, there's like a lot of finger pointing on who should be paying Leo.
Leo called
Brandon Gibbons. Gibbons said, call Salida.
Leo told us on air live last night he got paid.
All right, great. That's awesome. Yep. This is great. I think this is a great example.
Yeah.
You know, we've seen, how many times have we seen this, Chris, where the fight, they find a middle ground, they accept more money, the fight goes on, the guy doesn't really get penalized for missing the weight. We've seen guys come in on purpose as a strategy. I think this shows like there should be more harsher penalties if you don't make the weight. Aleem doesn't get paid, correct?
No, absolutely not.
He doesn't get his title shot.
He's also never getting a shot ever again.
No, this is his last shot. And he's been complaining about, when am I going to get my shot at 35 years old? And whatever, body betrayed him, or who knows what.
No, the real reason was. I do have some tea. Okay, so this is, I don't think this is out or anywhere. The hotel had major issues the night before the weigh-in. There was a flooding situation on a couple floors. They had to cut off the water. So Aleem was unable to do his tub sweats the night before. So there is actually...
Are you buying that?
Well, I know for sure that the hotel did.
No, I know that it happened. But are you saying that, is that a big time deterrent of making weight?
That is a big obstacle. There is no reason he couldn't book another hotel. I've done that with fighters.
This is your chance. This is it.
I've done that with fighters. I've come into a hotel. They didn't have a tub. The water didn't get hot enough. We booked a hotel across the street. Literally.
Like $89 a night.
Literally. Or you go to a gym with a sauna, you can make the weight. Yeah. It's your last shot. Gym. You make
a million hotels where you guys were staying.
But also, 3 pounds is a lot. That's a lot.
But still, if we could have got closer, who knows? If it was a pound, do you think Leo would have went through with the fight?
No.
Or was it just matter of...
You know why, Dan? And this is another caveat because of the situation. This is a unique situation. Leo hasn't fought in a year. The kid wants to fight. He trained for 2 months. He's fantastic. He looked awesome on the scale. He looked as strong as I've ever seen him. Looked great. One, Aleem is tough. It's a very hard fight. It was never going to be an easy fight. Number two, bro, Naoya Inoue, the winner of this fight is very much in the sweepstakes for Naoya Inoue. Are you going to take a risk and fight a guy who didn't make weight, who's very good? No. And you're going to get paid.
Did he say that, or is that just an assumption?
He did not say that. I'm going on record. He did not say that to me. I spoke to that. Angelo's a friend of mine. I speak to him personally. Yeah. He did not.
But he's thinking that.
How could he not be thinking that?
Of course. It's the Super Bowl. That's the winning lottery ticket.
Very smart move. And this was not a big money fight. It really wasn't.
No, I like it because everyone came out. I mean, obviously we wanted to see the fight, but if we're not going to get the fight, like, Leo got paid, Aleem got really made an example of where fighters need to rethink this now.
It's a shame. He's a strategy. He's a good guy, man. It's a shame.
Who, Aleem?
Yeah, he is. very good.
Yeah, it sucks. I know he was getting ostracized because he made some comments a few months ago or a year ago.
He kind of should.
He said he was the black Charlie Kirk. I don't know what that even means.
I don't know anything about that. That policy.
Yeah, that came up, and like I saw some tweets like, "Oh, he got karma," or like, I wasn't. Am I getting involved in that stuff? But I just see a guy that finally gets a shot, 35 years old, title shot comes. When you see the 3 pounds, it's almost like, oh my god, that's egregious. That's like you made a decision, or like you just stopped even trying. But you know, now you have this inside information about the baths and 35 too, trying to make 126. Not easy. Unfortunate. Fights did still go on like that too. Main event still went through.
Yeah, we moved the card up. It actually turned out to be a pretty decent card on the zone. Nice. I mean, the main event was the whole show. That was such a good fight. But we did have Atif Oberhalten, who is a
beast,
legit blue chip prospect.
Yeah, swaggy too. Guy can dress.
He is a character, man. So I've called his last two fights in a row. His fighter meeting.
The one in Detroit. What was he wearing in Detroit? I remember.
Well, he's like a real, like he's developing himself into trying to be a fashion icon. Like if you talk to him, like he was way over my head. I'm into somewhat fashion. This guy,
yeah.
He was naming names and designers, and he designed.
Was Najee up on any of it? Najee's a record executive.
I did not know that. But anyway.
It's in the music world, Najee. He comes from the music world.
Oh, okay. All right. That's
cool guy.
Najee is a cool guy. First time I ever
stepped in for you.
First time I ever met him. I know. He's
a good guy.
He was very good on the mic as well. Very, very good. Very well prepared. Very professional. Way taller than I expected. Apparently he's a basketball player. Tall. Did not know that. Yeah. I'm not normally the shortest guy on a broadcast. I'm usually the tallest guy, actually, but except when I work with Todd Grisham. But regardless, the fight with Atif. So Atif is an extremely, extremely interesting human being outside of the ring. Obviously, he's very, very good. Super high level amateur. Southpaw. Dude, he's a 6'3" southpaw from Philly who can punch.
So what is he, 168?
75.
Nice.
Absolute nightmare.
75's got some like stuff boiling underneath.
You know who is there? Najee Lopez.
Was he?
Who's watching Atif.
Najee, Ben Whitaker,
David Morrell now getting upset. We got, you know, a new guy.
Interesting times, my friends. All right, that's our episode. Let me get back to my family.
Yeah, my family just showed up, so I gotta go.
We got pasta. We got sushi up there.
Well, we're doing Italian too. Were you doing sushi? Pasta and
sushi? Yeah, you know what?
Pasta and sushi? Okay.
No, family group chat. We always do Italian. In family group chat, my mom goes, "We're gonna order from Mama Lisa's." Give him a pop here.
Nice. Send Marich. Mama Lisa's.
Phenomenal. My brother, one brother goes, "We always do Italian," gets just ridiculed in the chat. Like, what do you mean? What do you want? So my mom says, "We'll get sushi too."
Oh, he's saying we always do Italian. Like, let's do something different.
Let's do something different. My brother said, "Let's do something different." And then that was like, he might as well said, "I want out of the family."
Yeah. You're gone. Don't even come.
So we did.
Don't
my mom come. Did appease him. We have sushi up there. I'm going to go eat some of that. Watch the Knicks.
Tell him to eat it in the other room.
He probably will have to. Knicks are up 17 right now as we record. We're going to sweep the Sixers.
I wear my Knicks jersey with the Algeria on the back next show?
Next show.
I almost wore it today.
Next show will be Thursday from LA. I'll be in LA for the MVP MMA event. We got Keyshawn Davis fighting this weekend. We'll preview that. Chris will have another belt. If there's no belt on the line.
No, there's no belt on the line.
But if there is... This is
homage to Daniel Dubois, two-time world champion now. New WBO world champion. New segment for our show.
Heavyweight division. Heavyweight division is booming.
Hot.
Boxing's booming.
Hot. Fire.
Hot right now. Check yourselves at all time. Keep your hands up at all time, sailors. DM. See you next time.